Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us on WPR News. And it's great to have Liz Freemuth back with us. Liz provides concierge horticulture services through her business. And her business is called The Garden Hoe, and she works all over the country. She has a great list of gift ideas to share with us, and take your general gardening questions as well. So if you got a gardening question, or maybe you've got a gift you'd like to get, or one that you gave that turned out to be really nice for the giftee, I hope you'll join in and share all that with us. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Liz Freemuth, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Larry. I love doing your show.
Your business, you get around the country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this time of the year here in Wisconsin, business is probably a little slower.
Well, you know, a little slower, but as you know, we're gardeners plan all year long. And I'm looking at getting ready for the winter pruning around here.
Mm.
You know, that's coming up faster than what we'd like. As soon as the holidays are over, we can start hitting some of that on the good days. And, you know, right now with the amount of snow cover that's on the ground, people maybe didn't get to a few things that they should have. So there's always questions about that, like, should I worry? Should I not? But then, yeah, I start going to warmer climates. And
That's a tough job.
I actually love Wisconsin. I love the change of seasons. I don't mind the cold at all. Mm-hmm. I don't like the ice. And as we age, every fall is a potential concussion.
Yeah.
So no thanks. But no, it is fun. But I go where the growing seasons are the most intense. And so I've got clients in Florida and Georgia, and not hitting South Carolina this year, but possibly Oregon. So, you know, yeah, San Diego. Yeah, all over.
Well, you have come up with a list, and we'll have that list up on our page, talk@WPR.org/Larry, about 2 hours after the show is over.
Good.
So people can go to it. And it's a long list. Is it fun to assemble this?
You know, it is. And what I do is I start, you know, as soon as you ask, then I start talking to gardener friends and clients, or listening to what they're telling me. What do they like? What don't they like? What would they like to see? And I base my list off of that. Then also look at, is there anything new out there? You know, has somebody come up with something? Or, again, with each passing year, is a piece of equipment a little easier on your hand, or is a little harder? You know, so there's always something to look for, and I love it. I love it.
So have you come up with a gift that would keep the deer off of...
You're funny.
Everybody...
You're funny. Didn't you have that conversation with Scott Craven the other day?
Well, yeah, the surefire is a fence.
You know, it is. And actually, when you talk to the people who are in the nursery business, they're 9-foot fences.
Yeah,
you know,
that's amazing.
It's miles of 9-foot fences. And, you know, clients are often a little surprised when they say, how do I keep the deer off? Should I put like little netting up? No. I have tested all of that stuff in my own yard. They have moved in, they refuse to move out. And if they aren't eating something, they're rubbing something to death, or they're laying on it. One year, I know I was sick as a dog with the flu, and laying on the couch in the living room, and I had put fencing, you know, snow fencing around a tree. And I could see out the window the deer with their noses under the fence, lifting it up and sticking their head in and chewing. And in the death throes of flu, I'm out there with pan covers banging. It's like, no, they don't stop. They don't stop. The key is to figure out in each locality what they're eating and what they aren't eating. You know, I know that on one side of one of the lakes where I've got clients, they eat everything, absolutely everything. They take hemlock out as much as they can. On the north side, they don't bother it as much. So, I'm finding that there are pockets where, I don't know if it's as they're breeding and having babies, they're used to it. They eat my hellebores in the winter. They eat, you name it, they eat
it. Boy.
So, yeah, it's location by location, really.
Well, I've been looking at your list, and you've got tools on the list.
Mm-hmm.
That is at the top of your list, I think, garden tools. Are there overall things to think about when you select a tool?
There are. And one of the biggest things that we don't think about is the size of the hand that's going to use that tool. And it's I know a lot of people who love Felco tools. They're fabulous. They're wonderful, wonderful tools. But for me, if I'm pruning all day, my hand is tired about 3 hours in. And so my preference for hand tools, I list those out. It's ARS. It's a Japanese company. You can find them. We've got great suppliers in this state. One is Gempler's out of Janesville, and they carry a lot of these tools that I talk about. But ARS has got great longevity on the metal, so it holds an edge really, really well. Mm. Where some of them, I've got to stop and sharpen every hour or so. That's not the case with the ARS. I can go for easily a half a day or a day, depending on what kind of wood I'm cutting, without really worrying about how the edge is going to hold up. But they also make a smaller one, and it's lighter in weight. Felcos tend to be a little bit heavier, which are fine for generally a guy's hand or someone who's got a bigger hand. And I have strong hands. We come from potato picking family, so I got strong, big old hands. And yet the man size tools or the larger ones just are tiring, and I have to reach too far to open and close them. So these I find are the smaller size from ARS. They're lighter and they work. They work for me. What works for you might be a Felco in the big O size. Who knows? But keeping them sharp is a huge thing, though. That's size and then how sharp.
Sharpness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Philip in Trempolo has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Philip.
Good morning. I have a solution I put into place for deer around my garden probably 15, 20 years ago. I found online from Australia, there's a company that makes a AA battery-powered electric fence. And it gives a minimal shock. I tried it, of course, because I was so curious about it.
But tempting, isn't it?
It is. And so at the time, they didn't have a solar-powered one, but now they do. And I don't know the name of that company because I'm driving right now, and I'm just not at home to look it up. But it is a great solution. You just put it on the fence, and my fence is only about 5 feet tall, and the deer lean over and they get that little jolt, and no longer do they try to come across it. So
Well, good for you.
That is a great idea. You know, Scott Craven had told me 1,000 years ago when I had said, what do we do for deer? And having a fence that's 4 feet high, they will jump over that very easily unless they've been zapped at some point. But he told me often what will work is a single line at about chest height, because there is a blind spot in how they see, and that actually throws them off. But you have to hang stuff from it. So if you have an electric fence, that's a little more difficult to hang things from if you just want to run an electric wire. If you're putting it on a fence, much easier. But I have found that actually works around my vegetable garden. I don't even put electric on it. I use fishing line and run one line at about chest height and another at a little bit below waist height. And then I hang shiny things off of them. And what that does is those move in the wind. And because it's sort of a blind spot and Scott, correct me if he's listening, correct me if I got that wrong, but it seems to be working. However I remembered it, it's working. What happens every once in a while, especially late in the season when there's not as much to eat, they'll run through the fishing line. And, so that, like this year I lost all my celery. It grew and it was fabulous. And I went out one day and it was gone and they had run through the fishing line. So that happens. But yeah, it's a good idea. Put electrified in.
Thanks, Philip. Appreciate the call. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234. With your gardening question or maybe about a gift idea. You can also email us as well at talk@wpr.org. Let's take a quick break. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Having some fun today talking with Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services all around the country through her business, The Garden Hoe. It's great to have her with us. And if you have a gift idea or maybe a question about gardening, I hope you'll join in. 800-642-1234. Email to talk@wpr.org. You know, a few weeks back, I did a little video on Christmas trees. In fact, we're going to be talking about Christmas trees the last half hour of the show today. And I always, when I go to one of these cut-your-own places, I always take my own handsaw.
Yep.
Because the blade on mine is sharp.
Yep.
and that reminded me, what I was thinking about that when I saw another item on your list, which is replacement parts.
Yes.
For tools.
Yes. And, you know, all of us, many of us, most of us, are looking at how can I minimize my spending and still give a decent gift?
Yeah.
And if you have somebody that has fantastic tools and they use them a lot, replacement pieces are always welcome. Always.
Blades, you got springs.
Yep. Handles.
Handles, yeah.
Handles, you know, handles are one of those things that, you know, you can run them over, you can, you know, break them, whatever happens. Now, I have found, and one of the tools, and I did list out companies that I like of tools on the list, and I don't get paid by anybody for anything other than, you know, clients. But these are the ones that I have found stand the test of time and my horrible abuse of tools. I had a couple, and I had to start looking because I had a couple of hardware stores that said I was no longer allowed to come in and get replacements for those lifetime warranties because I would snap a handle on a shovel and I'd take them back in, and after a while they ban you. So bully tools are long-handled. They have, I think, a handful of short-handled, but long-handled shovels, rakes, things like that, I have not been able to break the fiberglass handles at all.
Oh.
And I abuse it. This year, it's, I think, year four on this shovel that I'm testing. It's a small, more of like a floral size shovel, so not as small as some and not as big as a huge spade.
Yeah.
And I have left it outside in the weather, in the everything, to see if it weakens the handle, to see if that will take it out. But I have not heard one iota of crack on that at all when I shovel. And I shovel some pretty heavy-duty stuff.
Tim in Hillsboro, we'll go to you. Hi, Tim.
Hello there, Larry. I hear you guys talking about deer fencing, and I wanted to share a little bit of my experience.
Okay.
This last spring, my wife and I decided to try putting an orchard in, so we planted 100 apple trees, and the deer started moving in very quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I knew I had to do something, and I couldn't afford to put up that 9-foot fence that we'd all love to have. So I already had a field fence protecting things down near the ground where the deer couldn't get under it. So I took some half-inch pieces of rebar and put them alongside the fence post and just wired them onto the fence.
Good idea.
And then I strung baler's twine on there, the orange baler's twine. I got, I think, 4 or 5 rows above the field fence of that. And I've had no trouble with the deer getting through since that.
Good. Good job.
Good
how high up did you go with the rebar above the field fencing?
The field fencing is only 32 inches tall.
Okay.
The rebar is 8 feet tall, and the top line is pretty close to the top of that.
Gotcha. Excellent idea. I do know that you can get 12-foot T-posts also that would accomplish the same thing without the wiggle that you might get with the rebar depending on the diameter of the rebar. So for anybody out there who doesn't have access to it, to rebar, that might be another alternative. But great way to add some height to it.
Yeah.
Great way.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too. The number is 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I see you have come up with a solution to my technique of putting my tools in a 5-gallon pail, carrying them around with me.
Yeah, a real tool bag. Yes,
you got a real tool bag.
Yeah, go to the tool department and get a real tool bag. And, you know, I did the same thing for years and years. And then I tried a leather plumber's bag, you know, so that they would be laying down nicely. And
yeah.
I've tried all different kinds. And one of my kids gave me a backpack that they had used in whatever mill they were in at the time. And it has been fantastic. It is a heavy-duty backpack with a couple of zippers, and it has all of these separators for the tools. So I can stick my pruners
in. So it's prime. It is definitely for tools.
It is definitely for, like, regular tools, like manufacturing, repair tools, et cetera. And the weight is fantastic on it, so you don't have to worry about your pruners poking through the outside. Where I hate to say this, but a lot of the gardening stuff that's out there is cute and it looks awesome. But if you use your tools every day, you're going to poke holes in, it's going to cut through, things like that. And they don't separate them out enough. So go into the tool department and take a look in there and see what you can find. So a real tool bag.
Another one, and I'm trying to remember who we were talking with on the show, one of our experts, and she commented on a mini chainsaw she got. And she said she couldn't believe how useful.
Oh, love them.
I can't remember who it was. Maybe Jill will let me know. She probably her memory's better than mine.
Well, I know I have mentioned it. I don't know. I may have had it on my list last year also, because it is one of those that, you know, let's put a public service announcement on it. Really be careful, because they will take a finger off. You know, so just because they're small and cute does not mean they're not deadly. So my suggestion is, if you're going to get a mini chainsaw of any kind, also get the cut-resistant gloves. So that and what they do, what those gloves do, is it catches on the chain and stops it. So you may get an injury, but it's not going to be a life-threatening or a digit-removing injury. But get a couple of batteries, and then in order to prolong the life on those batteries, like everything else, when it's charged, unplug it so that you're not overcharging on those batteries. But once you start using one and safely use one, you will be amazed that you went this long without.
Liz in Madison has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Liz.
Good morning. I appreciate the advice on hand tools, the ARS product. I went to their website. They have a great website, but apparently it's only for wholesalers and retailers. But what I'm most puzzled by is they have 20-some different types of pruning shears, and that's what I would need some advice on.
Okay, depending on the size of your hand and the size of branches that you're going to be cutting, the smaller pruners work just great. Now, ARS, I really want to promote local businesses, but if you can't find it and you can't get it through a supplier, Amazon has them every once in a while also. And so you're looking at more of a smaller hand and a smaller handle tool. And I don't, you know, I want to say maybe 6 or 7 inches is what I've got on the handle. And it won't cut anything more than about a half to really 3/4 if it's softwood. And so you have to move up the size if you're looking at larger cuts that you're going to be making with the pruners. And again, also what type of wood you're pruning also. You may, if you're going to be pruning hardwoods, you may want to go with something a little bit larger. But they are often listed as smaller hand tools. So you might want to start with that. And, you know, the Garden Expo's coming up in February, the Madison Garden Expo. And that those types of places can give you an opportunity to actually hold different tools and see how they work. You know, if you get something like through an Amazon or whatever, you can send it back if it doesn't work, you know, if it's the wrong size for your hand. But going to, you know, local garden center and trying the tools that they have so you can see what size works. If they don't have the exact brand you want, you can at least see the size that's comfortable for your hand.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the Garden Expo, it's I'll be broadcasting. We will be broadcasting from the expo. And this year, because of my retirement announcement, they've added some space for folks. So I hope we get a big crowd for that. Actually, the on-air, and then we're going to have an hour and a half afterwards just to chat off-air with folks who are there. So
that would be fun. Garden Expo is always a blast.
It's always so much fun. And I just love going around, walking around through the all the exhibits. I mean, so much. And you're right. You can try stuff out.
You can, and ask the questions of the people who are selling it. That's what they're there for. Let them tell you the good points of everything that they've got. And then you can make that decision from there on out. But yeah, it's an excellent way to see what's new out in the market so you can be prepared for the new spring season.
Jill was reminding me that she interviewed the author of the book Chainsaw Love. So that's where that little chainsaw conversation, that was back in November 21st, so for that show. So maybe that's where the mini chainsaw business came from. What about grow lights and maybe a planting and growing?
Yeah, for anybody who likes to start their own seeds, a decent grow light, and you can get grow bulbs. So if you have some sort of a fixture that will already work. I know we had a weird, funky multi-arm light that didn't go with anything at some point. So we took all the bulbs out and put grow lights in them. And you can get them at different heights, so you can have them closer, you can have them further away. And that way you can repurpose something that you already have. So you don't have to go out and buy an entirely new system for it. You can get somebody a nice box of grow bulbs for something. A bench can be anything from, a wire standing, the kind of wire shelf that everybody has in a closet somewhere or in the basement. You can use something like that where you can adjust the height and hang the lights from the shelf above. There are a lot of different ways that you can do that. You can make something for them, whether that's wood or, if you have somebody who welds, they could do a metal thing for you as well. So yeah, that's handy. Absolutely handy.
I had a three-bulb tree lamp, sort of, that I used for Limey, Limey. And so I had lights coming at three different levels.
And, really, they love that. The plants love that at that time of the year. You have to remember that when we're trying to grow things on the inside, our humidity levels are way less than what plants like. But with seedlings, you can also over-moisturize and give yourself a few problems with damping off and stuff like that. So having the lights at different heights will actually allow that plant to take in moisture take in daylight and use that moisture up and grow a little bit better.
We have some more things here. We got a lot of things on this list. One seed starter mix.
Yeah.
And some new start flats.
We all need that, don't we? And it's a nice gift. You can put it in a big bag so it looks really impressive. But I don't know too many gardeners that start their own seeds that are not going to need a new bag of seed starter. So, go out, get a nice good couple of bags and some fresh flats. It's good to rotate those starting flats out.
I was cutting my Christmas tree down. I took a kneeling pad out. You have a garden seat.
Yes, one of my favorite things. I bought it at a big box store. You can get them online. I don't know what they're called at this point because the company that used to make them got bought out. But it has it almost looks like a tractor seat. On the bottom and on the top. It's a rocking seat. When you sit on it and you can adjust the height, it's got a bolt, you know, and a wing nut that you can adjust the height on it so that you can sit down, not all the way on the ground, but that rocking helps you to increase the amount of space that you can reach without having to get up and move the seat. And you can flip around, you can just swing it around and go to, you know, a different row or a different plant. The only thing you do have to be a little wary is if your balance isn't that great, you may tip yourself off of it. So, you know, that takes a little bit to get used to. But it is the handiest thing, absolute handiest. It fits. I have a trug that I use for weeding. It fits right inside the trug. So I grab the trug with the seat and a little weeding tool, and off I go.
Off you go.
Yep.
So what about, here's an interesting one that I'm looking at. I was going to talk about lawnmowers and rototillers, but they're servicing.
Yes, service. Service. I mean, we all need our blades sharpened, and unless you're a pro at that, you know, the balance is really important, and you don't want to be cutting your own leg off because you tried to do it yourself. So, you know, take them in, go to your local servicer, the hardware store, or whatever, and buy a gift certificate for servicing.
I had a friend once whose name shall remain nameless.
Yes,
wanted to do his own. He did his own, and then he reinstalled the blades on his lawnmower, but he installed them backwards.
they don't cut very well that way, do they?
Oh gosh, we've talked about broad forks in
yes.
the past on
yes.
the show, and I know you've got some. You've got one you like.
I do. Bully. It's a handled tool. I love them for handled tools. And they have a great broad fork on their website, and you can order directly from them. You know, so you can go to Bully website, Bully Tools, and order directly from them. That's how I get them. I don't get any special discounts on that. And it is just a handy, handy thing because a lot of people are going to raise beds for vegetables, et cetera.
Yeah.
You do not ever want to, didn't rototill in the ground either because it pulverizes the soil a little bit too much. And so with raised beds, you definitely don't want to be flipping a rototiller into a raised bed, whether it's a small mantis or whatever. Not good for the setup that you're trying to grow in. And so using a broad fork where you can just get that in and you wiggle it. So you, for those of you who have never used one, it's a wide fork generally with two handles on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's flat at the top. And depending on what size you can find, it may be about 12 to 18 inches wide. And some you can get a little bit bigger ones for field use. But you pop that into the ground and then you rock it back and forth. And it loosens with those handles. And so it loosens the soil without pulverizing it. So you can get air and moisture into that raised bed, which is really essential for good, healthy growth.
Yeah, and a little workout too.
It is not bad.
Well, you mentioned the cut-resistant gloves earlier,
yep.
which is a great idea. But, you know, I've got, I don't know how many pairs of garden gloves.
Mm-hmm.
And not happy with any of them, to be honest.
Yeah, you know, I think we fall down on that as an industry where everybody has a little bit different taste. Yeah, I brought in a pair of my Fox gloves to show Larry what they look like because I talk about those. It was done by a woman who's in the industry out on the East Coast. She came up with the fabric and the design, et cetera. And they actually act more like a dress glove.
Yeah, they look like a dress glove.
They do. But what I have found is I can go into wet soil, and my fingers may be wet, but there's not a lot of dirt that gets in unless I've got a hole in one. And I will use them until the fingers fall off. So, but these will rinse off. You can throw them in the washer and the dryer. You know, they come out. They're fine. And they're
soft.
They're soft. They really do a good job. And if you're out working and they get too muddy, you hit them with the hose from the inside out, blows the dirt off, and you're good to go. But the other that I like, and I used to be able to find them at an Ace Hardware store, was a goat skin and kind of stretchy material. And so it was a leather, almost like a mechanic's glove, only they were goat skin. And goat skin you can wash, and it doesn't get stiff. And so those were my absolute favorites. I have not been able to, it's been about 10 years since I've been able to find the same maker of those. But if you can find a good goat skin glove, that goes a long way also.
Mine are all... I don't have goat skin. I can tell you that for free because mine are like stiff.
Yeah.
As a board. And
yeah, and so when you're using cowhide and you try and wash them, it doesn't work so well. Sometimes if you can find deer skin, those might be a little bit softer also and can take the moisture. But I know for sure goat skin we can use.
Let's go to Dot in Manitowoc. Hi, Dot.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm really enjoying your program today. I am learning a lot. And my question is, what type of item do you put on the paths, like, for instance, a tarp, to keep the weeds down?
Okay, between the rows, you're saying, Dot?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of different techniques for keeping weeds down. Are any of them successful long-term permanently? No. No, they're not. Weeds are plants that grow where we don't want them. So just by that definition, they are going to be much tougher than we are as far as whether they're going to come up or not. But in order to, I mean, so modify your expectations, number one. If you have plastic down, don't pull that up. Just don't use it. It doesn't work. Long term, it's more harmful than not. I have had more situations than I care to tell you about where things were not doing well. And when I go down 12 inches, there's landscape fabric.
Yeah.
And it's because over time, the dirt lands on it, the debris from nature lands on it, and it goes, it's just, the level keeps going.
It's a mess to get out.
It's a mess. That can work in some situations, but I haven't found one yet that I would recommend anyone using it for, quite honestly. I know people have said, if you're going to put gravel down, you put the landscape fabric, you're going to run into the same exact problem. You have plastic that is inhibiting everything natural from moving through into the soil, and it creates its own little bed. So you have essentially a container with that plastic underneath. And then if you put stone on top of it, you've got dirt, leaves, debris, etc., that are now going to grow weeds. Then you're going to have to go in and either pull them or chemicals. You still can't get the dirt and the debris out, and so it's a never-ending thing. So what do you use? You can use cardboard, you can use roofing paper or, you know, flooring paper, something like that, if you're going to put mulch down, because those will actually disintegrate over time. And so you'll buy a few years, and then you may have to go back and do it again. But it's just every few years you're going to just expect you're going to have to do something, rejuvenate it or redo it, et cetera. So that's, or, you know, depending if it's in a vegetable garden, if you can get some really, really clean marsh hay or something like that, that you can layer very, very thickly in between those rows, that can actually work for you again for a few years, and you'll have to rethink.
Yeah, I was thinking about the last very large garden, vegetable garden I had, but we had a lot of trees, so I would collect all my leaves, and I would run over to my parents' house and collect all their leaves, and then I just had leaves.
Yes, and you know, and that's, I am so happy to see that people in the industry are again now talking about, don't take the leaves off the lawn. Don't take the grass off the lawn, because for, you know, the last 30 years, it's been, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? Those are nutrients that can be used elsewhere. So whether it's on the lawn or in your garden bed. The only proviso with that is if you're using lawn and or leaves, make sure that they haven't been treated with any chemicals that could potentially inhibit or kill something that you're trying to protect and grow. Yeah,
that wouldn't be good.
No, so that's the only thing. But if you're not using a lot of chemicals on the lawn and you're not having your trees sprayed or injected, you're probably fine to use that and just layer them nice and thick.
Do you like the silky cutting tools?
Love them.
Do you?
Love them.
What's good about them?
They hold an edge. Yes, and so I get a good. Oh, I get a very long time out of the blades unless I break one. And if I break one, then that's on me because I'm using the wrong tool for the job. But the cutting is fantastic on it. They're sharp. The blades can be replaced easily. It's a screw in, screw out, and you're good to go.
Air tags. What the heck are we talking about here? Air tags for tools.
Yes, I had a friend of mine say to me the other day, you know, I went from, you know, point A to point B, and I had all my tools with me when I started at point A. When I got to point B, I did not have all my tools. And do you think I could find it? And so she said, I should have put an air tag on them. And I thought, you know what? Absolutely. If you've got those and you have Apple devices, well, they're locators. So you can put it on. People use them on their suitcases and things like that so that you can locate. And so this would be pop one onto your tools, you know, especially in the fall and in the spring when you're moving a lot of soil and or plant material. Things have a tendency to kind of get buried. And it doesn't matter if the handle is bright orange or green, we can still lose them very, very easily.
I had a hand axe in the Shawamigan National Forest that still lays there somewhere. And I can't believe it because I was just chopping up some little twigs and so forth. Mm-hmm. I set it down. I turned around to do something else. And the ghost of the Shawamigan Forest came in and carried it away,
yep.
I guess, because I couldn't find it, and it's still laying there somewhere.
We have all had that where it's like, yes, I know I had it. Where is it? Where is it? Yeah, like I said, it can be a bright orange handle, and we will still lose it. That just is. So it was a great idea. I thought I would pass that one along.
Mike in La Crosse, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I want to ask you about large pine bark nugget mulch.
Yep.
Used to be pretty common, can't seem to find it anymore. Is there some reason for that ecologically or something?
No, not that I know of. It may be one of, and you know, there might be, and I don't know that there is an issue with it, but often what I find is that it's more the availability and where it has to come from. A lot of those types of materials. And I'm not so sure we didn't get some of that stuff from overseas, but also it depends on it being a byproduct of another process. They're not going to be making pine nugget bark or mulch just because. So it's often a byproduct of some sort of processing, wood processing. And so it is a little bit more difficult to find. I know when I'm down south, it's a lot easier to find. We have had some insects and diseases that take pine out, and so that also can impact the availability just because they're taking trees out and not planting them. Because if we have a serious disease and insect issue, we're not going to put those trees back in the ground. And so that may actually be part of it also. But otherwise, I got to do a big, I don't know. But I do love pine bark. I love pine bark mulch. And I love down south where you can find the pine needle mulch and it's in rolls. And so it's not that they do anything other than really smush it and put the long pine needles together and it unrolls like sod. And so you can just kind of pop that stuff down. A little bit more difficult to get up here. Shipping is expensive on a lot of these things.
Timberline makes and sells pine bark nuggets online. I just looked it up while you were talking.
You know, one of the things that we forget is that our local garden centers are there to respond to you. But if you don't tell them what you want or what you need, then they're going to buy what they think or what they like. And so I would go to my local garden center and say, hey, I want X amount of pine nugget mulch. And and they'll order it in for you. And especially now is a good time to do that because they're going to be ordering for next year before the end of the year or early next year so that they can get it in.
Yeah, so you might talk to your local garden center, Mike, and just tell them, hey, can you put in an order for me? Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. You can call in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. If you got a question about gardening or maybe a gift thought, I hope you join in. Number's 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. As we talk holiday gifts for the gardener, we're answering gardening questions. We're having all kinds of fun. By we, I mean myself. I'm Larry Mueller and Liz Freemuth, my guest today, who provides concierge horticultural services all around the country, including Wisconsin, through her business, The Garden Hoe. And she is, obviously, she's located right here in Wisconsin and has always a word for you and for me about what's going on in the garden. Nancy in Middleton has a comment. Let's go there about mulch. Nancy, hi.
Hi. I heard you talking about people wanting to mulch between their garden rows, and I just wanted to share a hint I learned years and years ago and have used for many years. Old carpet that you're taking out of your house, especially if you have indoor-outdoor carpet, you slice it into the right size path that you want and roll it out in your garden. I've used it both for a flat garden and also between raised beds. It lasts forever. It keeps it out of the landfill. If you get too much dirt or stuff on, you just roll it up, shake it out, roll it back down again. It really doesn't disintegrate.
Do you roll it up at the end of the year, Nancy?
I don't in the areas where there are paths, unless, you know, where I like between my garden beds, I don't roll it up because I don't ever plant there. But it's really wonderful, and it's very easy to manage. And after a couple of years, it looks just like the soil. My only suggestion is that you don't put down something like red because it becomes really obvious. And the funny story I have is one time we had a foreign student whose parents were over here and did not speak English, but they came to our house for a meal, and I showed them my garden, and I didn't realize till later that they probably thought it was a really weird American thing that we carpeted our garden.
Talk about the excesses of America, right?
Nancy, thank you very much.
It's a great idea. I have used the carpet that people buy for RVs, you know, so that really thin stuff that's indoor-outdoor for kind of an emergency lay down. I will move my table and chairs around, and it's really nice to just have that little chunk of carpet. You pop it down, you put your table and chairs on, and then you can move it around to another spot. And what I do find is that it does kill the stuff underneath until you start to get holes in it. And I did notice that after about, I want to say it was maybe 5 years that I had one piece in the same spot, that the weeds were coming up and I had a tough time getting it down. So, but that was a really thin carpet. You know, with Nancy, I'm sure probably has padding or something like that on it also. But great use. And eventually it's going to have to go somewhere. And so if you can get a repurpose out of it, go for it.
Thanks, Nancy. Penny in Altura, Minnesota, what's on your mind?
I heard you talking about rototilling, and we have very heavy clay soil up here on the ridge, and my son and I have been planting garlic the last couple years, and this year I rototilled it to break up all those clogs of clay and make it a smoother. Is that a no-no still, or is clay an exception?
What you would like to do, what I would like you to do with the clay is to actually add some good organic material in with it. And to do that, you do have to break up clay. Using a broad fork would be a good first step, and then add some of the organic material in there, whether that's compost or some decomposed mulch. You know, often if people want to replace mulch on a garden bed, they don't want to just layer it or they don't want to work it in, you can rake that kind of decomposed mulch and put that into the clay. That works out really well. But what the issue with clay is that the air pockets are so small that moisture has difficulty getting through and air has difficulty permeating in between those very, very small particle sizes. And adding organic material to that will help with that. It does decompose over time, so it's not something you can do once and then you can move on. But incorporating something that is going to give you some longevity on getting those air pockets into the clay will help out, definitely. The particles on clay are so small that that's why you get that clumping and that slipperiness, and it's because the moisture and air has nowhere to go.
All right. Penny, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Linda in Eau Claire. Hi, Linda.
Hi. See, I have a suggestion for the woman who wanted something, a weed barrier for her garden. So every year I get mulch leaves from some very good sources, and they come in those brown bags that they give out for yard waste.
Mm-hmm.
So I take the brown bags and lay them down, and then I put my mulch leaves over the top.
Excellent.
That's a good idea.
That is a fantastic idea, and then you don't have to recycle the brown paper bag. It's great. Good job.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. Appreciate the call very much. We're getting all kinds of good suggestions.
You know, a lot of what we do is trial and error. And so sharing our errors and our successes is a great way to give every gardener a good leg up.
Now, when I'm out gardening, I usually wear my Wisconsin Public Radio baseball cap. And
shall we talk about sun protection?
My ears are usually sunburned.
Yep.
And you're a proponent of the wide-brimmed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do I always have one on? No. But I sunscreen every single day, 365. I sunscreen. And I will be out there in 100-degree heat with a long-sleeve shirt on. And because when you're out working and sweating, that sunscreen is not going to last that long. And a wide-brim hat will help you protect your face and your ears and the back of your neck and the top of your head. What I see very often in people is, especially as we age and our hair thins and whatever, we don't have as much protection on the top of our head. We see a lot of skin cancer on the tops of our heads. And so you want to make sure that you are protecting the top of your head. And, you know, whether you're young or old, we shouldn't be burning. We just should not. And so a good wide brim hat that has SPF label on it, that's a good thing. Same thing with shirts. We've got a lot of shirts, fishing shirts that are out there. They've got good sun protection. Yes, you get a little hot and you get a little sweaty, but it's either that or you deal with skin cancer. Take your pick.
Yeah, take your pick. And Phil Pelletieri always has talked about netting.
Yes.
On his hat to keep the mosquitoes away.
And it's so much easier now to find a hat with netting on it than it used to be, where you'd almost have to make your own or buy from Australia or somewhere where that's been something they've used. But yeah, absolutely. Why should we be swatting? We shouldn't. Our hands have to be doing something else.
I was just thinking about myself, cussing and swearing myself as I slap myself in the face.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. We have a lot more to talk about here, and we're going to do that. But we first need to do some other things, like look at the news. Mm-hmm. Liz Freemuth, our guest today. Boy, we're having some fun talking with her. Her business, The Garden Hoe, and we're talking gift ideas and taking other questions and a lot of good suggestions today from listeners, as there always is on Garden Talk. You can join in, too, the number 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org, and we will be back right after this look at the news. Stay with us. You are listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services all around the country through her business, The Garden Home. So it's great to have her back. We're talking about gifts, but it's been a great conversation to be, at least from my perspective, and I think from Liz's too.
Mine also. Fun. Always a treat.
We're having fun talking about gifts and taking questions or other people's experiences. I hope you'll join in. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk at WPR.org. I should mention that on Garden Talk next week, Tova Martin will be back.
Love Tova.
Yeah, we'll talk about houseplants and your family and maybe how you can coexist with them.
She is a national treasure. Yeah, she really is.
She is so much fun to talk with, as are you.
Well, thank you.
And here we are. I've got this list in front of me, which we haven't even gotten halfway through. Duluth Trading Company. There's a garden, there's an apron.
Yes.
That you like.
I do. I absolutely love it. I have had people ask me, and what do you use to carry your tools on your person? Well, the around the waist tool holders are really difficult when you're up and down, squatting, yeah, rolling on the ground, because sometimes you got to roll underneath the shrub and, you know, mm-hmm, whatever. So that makes it really difficult to keep those tools in place. They can work very well if you're standing in one spot and you can access that. But Duluth Trading, great Wisconsin company. Their clothing lasts. You know, I'm going to go to TMI. I apologize to the listeners right off the bat. Their Armachillo underwear is a gardener's best dream. Because you don't get all sweaty after being outside working. So, but their apron is absolutely fantastic. It's a gardening apron. It's not an inexpensive piece to purchase. And for me being shorto, it is very long. It'll go almost down to my knees, but it has zippers on the side where you can pull the front part up, zip it up, and it becomes a pouch. And there's a couple extra pockets. Yeah, there's a couple extra pockets in the front on top so you can get your phone in there. So your phone isn't in the same pocket as your tools, because haven't we all broken a screen doing that? And so there, it's designed well. And it has, it's over the shoulder, it holds very well. So the two straps go from the front to the back, and they don't fall off your shoulders. And that is kind of key also. Being long, the back is long, so when you sit down, you actually have a little bit, if the grass is damp or the dirt is damp, you can sit down and it's not gonna give you dirty bum syndrome. So that's handy also. Washes like a dream. So that has been my favorite. And I've tried various ones. I've even made my own linen aprons, and they don't hold up as well. Yeah. This is pretty tough fabric.
So, and that's from Duluth Trading Company. Mm-hmm. Water shoes. You have water shoes. Oh, and I'm wondering, what the heck is she talking about here?
You know, it's just the kind that you will wear to water park or boating, or if you're swimming in a spot that's got rocks in it. If you have a shoreline that you're doing any kind of work on, those are the handiest things to have. You don't have to worry about getting your shoes dirty. They don't slip. They've got non-slip bottoms on them. And it's an inexpensive stocking stuffer level gift. You know, you can pick them up for less than $10. And those, you know, if you wear them out, go buy a different pair. It's all good.
And Keen, you like Keens.
I like Keen for women boots. Men's boots, that's a whole different matter. But yeah, Keens have got a nice wide toe box on them. So a good leather ankle work boot is really important, especially if you're out there doing a lot of pruning, et cetera, that you don't want to drop a tool on a tennis-shoed foot. And so this will at least give you a little bit of protection. But good wide toe box, so if you're squatting, bending, et cetera, your toes aren't going to feel like they're in a vice grip.
And I should mention again as we go along here, I'm pretty sure we're not going to get through the whole list.
No.
And we'll have Liz's list posted today when we post our show. which is usually 2 hours after the show is over. So if you go to talk@wpr.org/Larry, and in the program notes, you'll find a place to click on that list. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to mention that again.
And also what I get frequently after I've been on the show is people will email me with questions. I'm happy to answer those also. So that's thegardenhoknows@gmail.com. That's usually listed on your website also. So if they've got really specific questions about something, they're welcome to ask.
Patricia in Antigo emailed, had a very productive garden in Madison for many years until canary grass got it into it and killed everything, including raspberry bushes she had for decades. Pretty sure the canary grass came in from hay mulch,
yep.
So she only uses straw mulch.
Well, it really, again, clean. The word
clean.
I use there is clean and knowingly clean. So you need to know your source. You need to know where it grew, how it was handled, et cetera. So that most definitely I'm glad she brought that up because weed seeds in any natural mulch, compost, et cetera, that you bring in is really, really key. One of the ways that you can really treat a little bit for insects and potential pests coming in is to heat under black plastic because, you know, if you get a load of hay in and you're not sure how that's going to be, then you raise that internal temperature to 165, 185, wherever it is, about the same temperature as your chicken would be or pork roast. That's as hot as you want it. And that will actually help you to get rid of those pathogens and weed seeds that may actually infest where you want to put it down. That requires thinking ahead. That requires you to say, I need that next year and get that solarizing going. Oftentimes, if it is an active, you know, like with straw or whatever, I don't think you're going to get a lot of decomposition that it's not right away. So putting plastic over it is going to help raise that heat a little bit because there's not a lot of green material in there generally when it gets harvested that is going to allow you to get natural heat. So that would be the solarizing part.
You had an item on the list I thought was kind of interesting, a bucket of oiled sand.
Yes.
Oiled sand.
Yep. That is old-timey coming back. That is an excellent way to clean and care for your tools. What you do have to be aware of is you don't want really fine play sand, something like that. You're looking for...
Of course.
Yeah, you're looking for a little bit of grit. But the type of oil, back in the day when we didn't worry about dumping gas and oil into the ground, people would just use their leftover motor oil and put that in with the sand. But what you're looking at doing is like a good mineral oil or a linseed oil, and you would take a 5-gallon bucket or used to be a wooden box. I'm a traditionalist. If I can get a wooden box, I am happy with that. But you would put some sand in and, you know, there's different techniques of doing it. The oil will actually permeate the sand. So best recommendation is to put fill it halfway with sand. Then put the oil on it and give it a little bit of time, a day or so, to sink down through the sand. And then put you're going to stir that. And then you put another layer of sand and put more oil in. And you want to do that slowly. You don't want the oil pooled, but you want the sand to have oil in it. And then you can either store your shovels or your hand tools in that. And you clean off the dirt. You pop it into the sand, you kind of wiggle it around a little bit. It will help prevent rust from forming on things, and it will also oil the metal up. So it's just a great way to really keep the tools healthy, and it cuts down on the amount of work you have to do in cleaning and sanding. Things to watch out for, if you're using really shiny stainless steel with that kind of shiny finish on it, it will scratch it. So, you know, you want to be a little bit careful with that. Painted tools, it will take the paint off. But if you're using your painted tools, paint is going to
come off anyway. Yeah.
And so that's my recommendation. And, you know, what I tried to put on this list for people is things from every category and every price range. so that, I mean, yeah, we could, I would love it if somebody would buy me a new golf cart with a dump bed on it, but that's kind of an expensive gift to put on a list. And so there's things that we can do, whether it's finding an antique box and getting some sand and putting some mineral oil in it, or even just give somebody the box or a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket with a bag of sand and a container of mineral oil or linseed oil and let them make their own. You know, these are all things that you can do last minute. Did I forget a gift? I'm going to stop at Menards or Quick Trip and pick something up. What could I get? You know, there's always a little something that a gardener needs.
There's another whole category we hadn't even gotten into was structure.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean by structure?
Well, what does your gardener need? And this goes to cost and how much you want to spend and what your gift is. So a raised bed. Raised beds are wonderful. They're not really all that difficult to put together. You want something that's going to match your home environment, your landscape, etc. But maybe they can't put it together themselves. You know, maybe they have one and you know that they haven't been able to put it together themselves. Offer to do that for them. Or give them the pieces if they're handy and let them put it together. So a raised bed and then potentially the fill for it also. And one of the things we do forget about is that it takes an awful lot of soil to fill a raised bed. Especially if you're doing one at waist height, that's an awful lot of soil. So if you have somebody with raised beds that is just starting to do this, maybe you take them some brush from your own yard. Not diseased brush, but small branches, etc., that can go into the bottom of that, and then maybe a nice load of soil. That's a good gift. Lighting, that's another structure thing, that it can be fun or it can be, you know, practical. Do some outdoor lighting. Maybe that raised bed could use a light on it. Maybe they like to garden at night. Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
When you were talking about the amount of soil that a raised bed takes, I was thinking about, it was Art Peterson, soil scientist. I had a rest of his soul. I had him on the show. This is years back. He said, you know, we were talking about loss of soil, a ton of topsoil per acre per year, 3 tons. And I said, what does a ton look like? And he said, well, it's about what you fit in a good-sized bathtub.
And it's amazing, isn't it?
Amazing.
Yeah. You go and pick up a bag of soil, that's not going to get you very far at all.
No. You have plants on your list.
Yes. Why not?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the greatest things that we have that you don't find elsewhere here is, you know, we've got lovely companies in this state. And again, I get no money. I do this because I really, really do like these companies. Jung has got the greatest selection of bare root plants. Mm-hmm. And not now, but get a gift certificate and pick something out. And maybe pick out a specific plant. So this is a gift certificate. I'm going to go with my personal preference today is quince. You know, go and get, say, this is a gift certificate, or I owe you one quince bare root, or, a half a dozen raspberry roots when they're ready. And make it an event that you go and do together. So, you know, hey, I want to take you to get this. Let's go shopping. And so in the spring, that's what you do. So it's a gift that gives a bunch of different times. And especially if you have a plant that you've enjoyed growing and you know their conditions are similar, that they may like that as well.
Good idea. Russ in New Berlin emailed, a different kind of question here. He's had stumps ground on arborvitae and spruce trees, and the grindings were returned to the soil. He wants to replant in spring with young arbs. Will he have to remove and replace the chips created in January?
Um, I, I don't think you're going to be 100% successful putting new plants into just those wood chips for a couple of different reasons. Number one, there's not enough structure there for those roots to really take and thrive. But the other thing is fresh wood chips suck a lot of nitrogen out of the soil. And so what you're going to end up with if you just leave that is you're going to end up with a structure that is not going to be supportive of roots and also is going to be lacking in nitrogen accessibility for that new plant. So I would suggest that you kind of rake those chips up. If they're in the soil, you're pretty much stuck with that. You might want to add some organic material, put some compost in with it. But then also, right now we've got plenty of snow. I would say otherwise put down a good slow-release fertilizer that's heavy on nitrogen on that area. Because doing that will give that decomposition process on the wood chips or on the dust, you know, whatever is a remnant there, that will give those something to suck off of rather than pulling it out of the soil. And it does need nitrogen to decompose. It's going to pull it, so you may have to overcompensate slightly. What I would suggest is a soil sample before you start putting down loads of nitrogen. You may be in an area that has plenty or maybe too much. So that would be a good thing to do. And that's actually another good gift that I didn't put on here would be soil, you know, a soil test. Just give somebody a soil test. You know, I'll pay for your soil test.
Well, another one you didn't put on there was quince jam, which... Jeff and I each got a jar of quince jam, among other things. You had some nice holiday Christmas gifts for us. Thank you.
Merry, merry, ho, ho. I love giving. I really and truly do love giving. Yes, you guys got quince jam from the quinces off of tree in my yard. Quince are not native to the U.S. I have been growing this one, and thank you, Jung's, because I bought it from them, and... it has been a phenomenal plant. It is from the Caucasus area in Mediterranean and the mountainous region, blah, blah, blah. You know, it comes from there. We've had it in this country for a very, very long time. It's a softwood tree. I don't have a lot of issues with it, and it regrows beautifully. So in the storms, when I've lost a branch, you know, you trim it back and it pops a whole bunch of new other ones up. Virtually no care on this one. You don't have to spray. You don't have to do much of anything at all other than make sure it's got plenty of sun. The pH is 6 to 7, so in some areas for us, that you may have to watch the health, long-term health of it, but really just does beautifully without any care whatsoever. Difficult to work with, so I used that and I made jam, and it is fantastic.
The
strain on your hand cutting the fruit is pretty amazing. It's because it's a very, very hard fruit, and you have to prepare it specific ways in order to get a good end product. But it's wonderful with goat cheese.
Yeah, I'm going to be trying that out again soon. Well, and, you know, there's other, you've got a garden jam that you call.
Yard jam.
Yard jam.
Yard jam. It. Yeah, I get requests for the yard jam. I will do that. I will make jam out of whatever is in fruit in the yard. And so it may be amelanchier and mulberry and... You know, if there's a cherry there somewhere or gooseberry or whatever happens, I'll throw them all in together and make a good jam. And always turns out it's sugar and fruit. How bad can it be?
Yeah, how bad can it be?
Yeah. And, you know, in that vein, if it has good pectin, you know, quince does, pear does, apples do, just squeeze a little lemon juice into it and you're good to go. Always follow safe food practices. So if you've never been educated on safe food preservation, get yourself some education on that so you ain't killing anybody with your gifts. So yes, and I was very fortunate early in my years that working for Extension, I also did joint classes with our food preservation and food safety woman, and I would talk about growing it. She would talk about how you properly prepare it. So I have been well educated.
Well, we've got self-care on the list.
Oh, yeah. You know, how does your back feel after you garden, right? Sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it's okay. Self-care is important, and we do have to sometimes remind our gardeners, take care of yourself, you know, and that could be something as simple as a wonderful lotion or, you know, a manicure, a pedicure, something on that order, but just to have some fun and maybe have fun with something that's not a plant. So jigsaw puzzles, you know, that is, and coloring. Those things are freeing to the mind, and you can really find a happy space if you can keep your hands busy and your mind not focused on day-to-day problems.
And you can give a certificate for a massage?
Or absolutely.
Sauna?
Mm-hmm.
What about sauna?
Oh, sauna. We have down in the southern part of the state people who had this wonderful idea, and I think it's wonderful. They will take a sauna wagon to your house.
Oh!
And you can have a sauna in your own house. They will bring it to you. You use it. They take it back. And isn't that fantastic? If you have the wherewithal and you love it a lot, then maybe help someone build it. But yeah, it's fun to just do.
Edna in Retreat, Wisconsin, emailed, last summer she put cardboard on her garden plot, which had been neglected for years, so it was full of weeds. Mm-hmm. And she's leaving it on at least until late spring. Is it better to remove it before planting?
No.
Or put the soil right on top of it?
Put it right on top. Where I worry about removing things is if the layer is super, super thick and it's not going to decompose. But if this is a spot where you're going to work it up in 3-4 years, potentially, or you're going to add to it, no, leave it. It's fine.
Garden catalogs, seed catalogs.
Mm-hmm. Sign your gardener up. Yeah.
I was trying to remember. I haven't started to receive any yet.
I've gotten, I think, Johnny's, and usually Burpees follow shortly thereafter, and I've got to order my Baker's for this year. Baker's is fancy. Seed Savers, I'm sure you can probably get that. And, you know, that was something I didn't put on my list, is garden travel. And, you know, you really think about taking your gardener out to Seed Savers in Decorah, Iowa. They have got a wonderful, wonderful apple orchard. They're doing their historical. I mean, it's wonderful. And that can be just a lovely weekend, you know, schedule it around a class or even just to go out and look. But those are, you know, or a wonderful botanic garden. A membership to that is also a great thing.
Yeah, we've got some really nice ones here in Wisconsin. I'm a member of Olbrich, for example, because I live about a half a mile from Olbrich.
Yeah, and I think what we tend not to remember are those gardens when we're traveling for something else. I look them up. Every destination I go to, I look to see what garden I can go and wander around in. And you can get national memberships to Horticultural Society, et cetera, that will get you either a discount for entrance fee or sometimes free.
You ever been to the Missouri Botanical Garden?
Yes.
Isn't that something?
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely
wonderful.
That'd be
a nice trip, too.
Yeah, and you know what? If you go this time of the year, their light display is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Not so much on the plants, but the light display is fantastic.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, and Happy New Year, and Happy Holidays. It's such a pleasure, and thank you for the gifts, Liz.
Oh, my pleasure, and thanks so much for the great gardening listeners out there. We wouldn't do it without them.
You're exactly right about that. And you will be back. Let's put it that way.
I hope, yep.
You will be. Liz Freemuth, who provides concierge horticultural services through her business, it's The Garden Hoe. It's great to have her with us. And you can type in The Garden Hoe and that's going to pop up. But we also have your email. Your email up on our page, too. So we'll make sure it's up there for today's. And we didn't talk about Christmas trees, so why not do that now? That's next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News and Garden Talk. Well, if you put up a real Christmas tree, I hope you'll stay listening in here. We have some tips for selecting and caring for that real Christmas tree here on Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, and Laura Jahl is back with us. She's an associate professor and extension specialist in the College of Agricultural and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. She's an expert on woody ornamentals, nursery management, landscape installation, and maintenance and tree care. So we can talk about all of those things, too, as a matter of fact, as we move along today. But we'll zero in a bit on Christmas trees with her. But I hope you'll join in if you have a woody ornamental or nursery management or landscape installation kind of question. Feel free to join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Laura Jahl, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Oh, thanks, Larry. It's good to be back.
We have, I did a little video earlier, maybe a month back, on cutting a Christmas tree. There's about, I think, 1,400 or so Christmas tree farms in the state. And they have lots of different kinds of Christmas trees. I talked a bit about balsam and Fraser because I think, are they the two most popular, do you think?
Yeah, and rightfully so. They smell terrific. They're soft needles, and they retain their needles longer than spruces or pines, as long as you have water in the reservoir.
Yeah, but there are others. White pine?
Yeah, there's white pine, there's Scots pine, and then there's the spruces, but I tend to steer away from the spruces, especially Colorado blue spruce, because the needles are like hypodermic needles. They are super sharp. And trying to decorate a Colorado blue spruce tree might come away a little bloody. They also don't retain their needles very long. I know they're pretty, but they have a lot of disease problems, and they drop their needles indoors like crazy.
I have a lot of heavy ornaments, so I like the Fraser better than the balsam.
Yeah. Yeah, I have heavy ornaments, too. Selecting a good, sturdy tree, either way. And there's also Canaan fir, which is a variety of balsam fir. And it is more southerly, but I've seen it grown up here as well. And so those are the top three. Canaan fir, C-A-N-A-A-N, and then, of course, balsam and Fraser.
So those are some of the trees. I'm going to mention the UW-Madison Forestry Club has a Christmas tree sale.
Right, starting today, and they sell out quickly. They'll probably sell out by the end of the day or early tomorrow.
Yeah, so it's right on Linden Drive in the Stock Pavilion.
Yep.
And they got balsams, and they got Frasers, and cash or check. And there are probably many other organizations. Of course, there's all the private companies that are farms, tree farms, but there are a lot of groups all over Wisconsin that do this as kind of a way to make a little money for their club or organization. So it's a lot of fun to help them out as well. When you're thinking about the tree itself, once you got it in the house, I usually cut the bottom off if it's been sitting a little while.
Yep.
It's a good thing to do.
Yes.
It helps the, I've been told or understand that it just helps the uptake of the water.
Yes, it does. Because a lot of times at the, you know, we don't know when these trees were cut. That's why I'm a big fan of buying local trees right from the grower if you can. I do know the Christmas tree sale by the Forestry Club on campus, they get theirs, at least in the past, they've gotten theirs from Wisconsin Christmas tree growers. So they're pretty fresh. Some of the big box stores
They get their trees from all over the place, and they could have been cut as early as October and then shipped. So
that's a long time.
I know it is, and they dry out very quickly, especially indoors. So giving it a fresh, clean cut, about 2 inches from the base of the trunk, straight, not on an angle, and this will fit in your reservoir container to hold the tree up, and you don't need to add anything else except water. Do not add sugar. Do not add pop. Don't add bleach. I mean, I see all these different concoctions, and, you know, the tree has already been cut. It did produce its own sugars, and adding it won't uptake the sugar. It will attract ants and your dog licking inside the bowl.
Or the cats.
Or the cat, yeah.
What do you do? My cats love to climb up into the tree if they can.
Oh, boy. And
certainly, they love to eat the needles, and then they throw them up all over the house.
Oh, God.
What about location in the house for a tree?
Yeah. Well, you want to obviously have it in a location that everybody sees and appreciates. Keep it away from heat vents, if possible, or heat registers. That just dries the tree out even more. Keep it away from a fireplace, obviously. Check on it daily for water. Especially the first watering, it may suck up a gallon of water in a couple days easily. So you need to keep checking it on a regular basis. Because once it dries out, it's going to dry out the needles will dry out very quickly.
Yeah, and the only downside of keeping it full is the cats like to get in there with their paws and spray it around.
Yeah. Fortunately, I have dogs. They don't do that.
Oh, God. Laura Jell, our guest today, we started here talking about Christmas trees, but we'll take other questions as well as we visit with her. And I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. You could email talk@wpr.org. Or if you've got a story associated with your Christmas tree, we'd love to hear that as well. Of course, Laura is an expert on woody ornamentals and landscape installation and tree care maintenance. So she can handle, she can handle all of those questions as well. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today for Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Laura Jell, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison. Questions for her relating to Christmas trees or maybe something else relating to some woody ornamentals that you have growing in your property. I hope you'll join in. The number is 800-642-1234. You can email to talk@wpr.org. Once, and this was many years ago, someone gifted me a living tree for a Christmas tree and, you know, to have inside, but then plant outside afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Mine didn't work.
No.
I mean, I wondered what you thought. Is it a good idea or?
Well, it depends what the tree species is. I've seen some of these live Christmas trees that are sold in garden centers and they got a pot and soil, but the actual plant itself isn't cold hardy here. It depends on where you get it, obviously, but I was looking at them like, oh, these are really cute, but they're not going to survive our winters because they're not cold hardy. But there are some that are cold hardy. The problem is they weigh a ton, number one, because you got a root ball piled around it, and they do dry out in the house, and they're hard to water. Especially if it's, typically they wouldn't be bald and burlap, but in a container, you've got the drainage out of the pot. You got to catch so it doesn't ruin your floors. You don't want it sitting in the water either. It's low humidity in house. And then putting it outside, you got to wait until spring. So you have this tree in your house. and hopefully there's no insect eggs that hatch while inside your house.
And maybe a question about decorating outside before we go to the phones here. Concerns relating to decorating those trees outside, your tree outside, can lights cause problems?
Well, I have myself, I have a bunch of evergreens in my yard, and yes, you can decorate them, you know, running extension cords to the tree to plug in the lights. You know, make sure the lights are for outdoor use. Some of them are not. And LED lights are last a long time. You know, hang up fruit or even on, you know, little bird feeders in the tree that'll attract birds and it'll provide food for them. It also is a nesting place or a place that they can get into in harsh winters and provide some protection if you don't have any evergreens in your yard.
Yeah, all good points. Nate in Iowa County has a different kind of question. Let's go there. Hi, Nate.
Hi there. Say, I'm wondering if you could comment on how to help a North Star cherry come out of winter with some brown rot issues. Planted it this summer, kind of did some self-diagnosing of brown rot, and just wondered what how to help it survive.
So,
well, oh, go ahead, Larry.
Oh, I was just going to say maybe you could describe it first, Laura, brown rot.
I imagine it's on the fruit. I'm not real familiar with diseases on fruit crops. It sounds like this is a fruit crop, but regarding brown rot, if it's affecting the fruit, one of the best things you can do, or the leaves, is to rake up the fruit, rake up the leaves. I know we got snow on the ground, so it doesn't matter now, but in the future, try to get rid of that inoculum because it'll overwinter in the dead leaves and dead fruit. Am I hitting the ballpark here?
Native,
I really don't.
Yeah, go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, that all sounds familiar to me. It did not end up producing fruit. It kind of all defoliated and got kind of brown and shrivelly this summer. The twigs are still pliable, so I'm not quite ready to give up on it. But
Yeah. I would send a sample to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, UW-Madison, and Brian Huddleston runs the clinic. He's wonderful, and he can help tell you which pet fungicides to use if it is a fungus. You want to make sure to get good diagnosis, because if you spray something that is listed for something else, it could be another vascular disease. I really don't know without seeing the plant.
Yeah. All right, Nate, give that a try. Get a hold of a sample for the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and you'll get some good advice from Brian Huddleston. Brian will be one of the people with me, actually, at Garden Expo. He and Lisa Johnson, three of us have been doing a show together at Garden Expo, and we'll be doing that live. For this year's Garden Expo, that is right around February 13th, I believe, is the date for for the expo. You'll probably be there, maybe there as well. I'm wondering about some other things that we might be doing with our trees. I know one thing, somebody was asking me about lilacs and cutting back lilacs this time of the year. And so what's your advice on trimming this time of the year?
I wouldn't trim lilacs this time of year. You're cutting off next year's flower buds because they set their flower buds primarily in summer for next spring's bloom. However, if you're rejuvenating renewal pruning a lilac, I personally like doing that right before bud break, even though I am sacrificing some flowers, but a renewal pruning where you remove about one-third of the largest diameter branches back to the base of the plant. And you do this every couple years for suckering, large suckering lilacs like your French lilac, common lilac, some of the others. But you wouldn't do this on like Palabin lilac, Miss Kim lilac. Those don't produce lots of suckers and they don't grow as fast. This is for the big ones. Deer, you got to watch for deer because they like lilac buds. And they tend to eat them, which really sucks because then you don't have any buds in or flowers in spring.
Not a good thing.
No. You wait all year for it. And,
So I'm thinking, you know, we always talk about pruning oaks and so forth.
Dormant season.
And I think we're in a time now when I wouldn't be too nervous about it.
No. It just realize if you're removing things before spring, you are removing potential flower buds. However, for any type of renewal pruning on the big lilacs, early spring is a great time to do it, or right after it's done flowering if you don't want to sacrifice any flowers. The only thing is, if you wait later into spring, you've got disease issues, and it tends to get hot and it's hard to see. I like doing some of the large suckering shrubs like dogwoods, like red twig and gray dogwood. This is, you know, late winter, early spring is a great time to do renewal pruning, especially the larger diameter branches on dogwoods because those are very prone to disease. And you want new suckers coming up that are not only redder, but may be a little bit more disease resistant.
Yeah, makes good sense. Speaking of resistance, what are the elm varieties? I mean, you know, we had so many beautiful American elms, and most of them are gone, or many of them are gone. And I know there's been a lot of research, and we don't talk very much about elms anymore because of that. But there are some that show some resistance.
There are. And a lot of these elms that are... Now, Dutch elm disease resistant does not mean Dutch elm disease immune. They could get it. And we've had some regal elms on campus as well as in Olin Park that have come down with Dutch elm disease. These new elms that are coming out, a lot of them don't have any American elm in them. They actually are hybrids of a several different elm species, usually from Japan or China. They're not invasive, and one of my a lot of breeding efforts have happened not only at UW-Madison but also at Morton Arboretum. And some of the best ones I really like that came from the Morton Arboretum include the cultivar or trademarks Triumph as well as Accolade. And those two I like a lot. They especially Triumph, because the leaves are thicker, they're not as prone to leaf-feeding insects as some of the other ones, and they have withstood drought conditions very well once established. Same with Accolade. Those are really nice, and they have, especially Accolade has more of a vase-shaped form that people really love. I know I grew up in Detroit, and I remember our street was lined with all these elm trees that one by one died, and as a three-year-old child, I was really sad, and I says, why can't we save these trees? And to be honest, Larry, that was my calling to horticulture. I wanted to help the trees.
Oh, a nice story. I'm glad you told that. Mary had emailed. Her blue spruce had to be removed. That's probably not surprising to you, maybe. What native evergreen do you suggest for planting here in the state?
Well, we don't have very many native evergreens. We have, of course, arborvitae. Unfortunately, the deer love them. You have junipers, eastern red cedar, which is a juniper. Unfortunately, that is prone to some a disease called rust, and it has these big orange gelatinous balls of ooze that come out of these galls every spring. If you have any rose species in your yard, like rose family, such as crab apples, quince, hawthorns, that the disease has an alternate cycle, spends part of its life on the junipers and the other part on, you know, the hawthorns and quince and crab apples and apples. The other one is eastern white pine, very beautiful tree. I have a huge one in my yard. But you have to have very well-drained soils, slightly neutral to slightly acidic, at high pH, they'll get very yellow, the needles, and you need excellent drainage, no heavy clay. There's also red pine, and red pine is another pine that you see in Wisconsin. It's a two-needle pine, and as the tree gets older, I think the bark is kind of attractive. That also needs excellent drainage and slightly acid to neutral pH. Then you go to your spruce. We have white spruce and black spruce. Black spruce is not for the landscape here. It grows in swamps in northern Wisconsin and is not suitable for our soils here or for a drought. It likes wet feet or slightly moist soil. The white spruce, on the other hand, has been used as a landscape tree. There is a cultivar called Denseda, which is the Black Hill spruce. It's just a cultivar of white spruce that was from South Dakota. And those white spruce can be used, but they're becoming very disease prone. Yeah. It's really unfortunate. And then regarding a native fir, that's balsam fir. But again, balsam fir is like these other evergreens. They grow up north. They like well-drained soils and slightly acidic to neutral pH.
Yeah.
So not a lot of options with our native ones. You can try them, but I would get a soil test done first.
Well, and balsam, of course, that was one of the Christmas trees you were talking about. The Fraser's the other one. Fraser's not native to Wisconsin, but certainly grows here.
Yeah, yeah. It's zone 5 kind of plant. It's from the mountains of North Carolina and southern Virginia, but they're not cold hardy up here. I mean, they are cold hardy up here, excuse me.
Yeah, they're cold hardy, so they're slower growing than like a balsam, but they're not as, their limbs are further apart.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't look maybe quite as full, from a Christmas tree perspective as the balsams, but I got a Fraser because they handle the heavier ornaments better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like balsams because they smell so darn good.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. They smell. That's probably the best smelling Christmas tree.
Yes, yes. And I just love it. I'm a big fan of getting live Christmas trees.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. It's been a pleasure, Laura. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's always a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you and talking with you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Larry.
Laura Zhao, Associate Professor and Extension Specialist in the College of Ag and Life Sciences at the UW-Madison, our guest today. Always fun talking with her. Just a look ahead. Monday, we're going to be talking about technology, and Beth DeAngelo is going to be back to talk with us. And then at noon, we're going to switch gears quite a bit, as a matter of fact. And we'll talk about how to prepare for a midlife career change. Have you, has that entered your mind? Are you at the midpoint? Or even if you're not, you probably are going to learn something as we talk about that on Monday's program. And I want to thank you so much for joining us today on Garden Talk. These Garden Talk shows for me are some of the most fun shows that we do. We have a very large audience for Garden Talk, and I hope that I'm going to have a chance over the next 6 or 7 months to see you in person and talk with you. Garden Expo will be kind of the first spot where we'll have a chance to do that together. It's always fun to work with the team that we have here, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod, technical directors Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, our executive producer, of course, Jill Nadeau, who I call Jilly from time to time, which I'm not sure she likes that or not, but anyway, she's one of my many bosses, and it's fun working with her, really fun working with her, and it's fun having you joining us. Thank you for listening very much, and stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.